Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, November the 29th, and today we'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We'll get into a few things, including looking back at a great movie that came out 80 years ago this week. So let me say hello to our friend Bill. How are you, Bill? How is everything in New York these days? Oops, wait a minute. Let's make sure you're on. I think you're on now. How are you, Bill?
Yeah,
how is everything in New York?
Well, New York, that's a philosophical question. Politically, of course, the place is a complete mess. I mean, I don't know. You know, Barry Goldwater once suggested that they saw off the East Coast and send it out to sea. And I always thought that was kind of a joke, but I'm thinking, you know, maybe there's something to it. You know, we could float out in the Atlantic and maybe rethink the way things are done in New York. I see there's now a story that just came up that New York City will now begin to hospitalize involuntarily more mentally ill people. Well, gee, I'm glad they got around to taking care of these people and giving them the care that they need. Because, you know, many people don't realize that some of the crazy things that we have in our systems today that they think were brought about by right-wing Republicans were actually brought about by liberals. You know, if you go to buy a gun and go through a background check, what people don't realize is there are many things that are not allowed in that background check because of liberals who didn't want mental health information to be released because they said it would discourage people from going to get help. And we have the same thing here in New York, where all these liberal policies over the years have built up and have resulted in an absolute mess. People are leaving New York State in droves. And so when you say, how are things in New York? I don't know, how should things be? It's we have a terribly ineffective governor who was just reelected, elected. She was elected for the first time. She was a lieutenant governor, and we have a mayor in New York who I think has kind of given up, even though he's in his first year, and the city seems kind of helpless, in very poor shape. So that's how things are in New York.
Yeah, well, it's one of those questions. What do they call them? Rhetorical questions? Is that what they call them? When you ask a question like that. But I think, let me put it this way. New York has seen better days.
Oh, yes.
There was a time in New York history when things were better and the city, you know, for such a long time, Bill, New York City was almost the definition the definition of the United States. If you mentioned New York, anywhere in the world, you know, New York City, the Empire State Building. I mean, it was just like the face of
Broadway.
The country. Yeah, Broadway. It was like the face of the country. And it was just, it's so sad to see the country fall apart like that. I mean, the city fall apart like that. Because I understand the rest of the state, for example, if you divided the vote between New York City and the rest of New York, Zeldin would be the governor today. That's what I understand.
Yes, well, that's true. That's true. He came, actually, within about 4 points of being elected governor, but what he could not break through was the zombie vote in New York City, where people just go to the polls and vote for anybody with a D next to their name.
Yes.
And it's just... it's so frustrating because he would have revolutionized New York. Now, I also note that we should note a new survey of California, that California is moving further and further to the left. In terms of the makeup of the state legislature, it's getting more and more left-wing. Well, that state
is.
in terrible shape. I mean, you've seen what goes on in California all the time. And yet the people go to the polls and they elect these left-wingers. The new mayor of Los Angeles, Karen Bass, is an old devotee of Fidel Castro. I mean, I don't know what people are thinking, if they're thinking anything.
Right. But, well, you know, the new mayor of L.A., Bill, it's like the L.A. version of de Blasio. I mean, it's
yes.
like, I mean, it's just a joke, that lady out there. So I don't know. I mean, I heard somebody say the other day, I was listening to I don't remember who I was listening to on the radio, but they were saying that we're becoming more blue and more red. That's what we're becoming. So if you live in Minnesota, let's say, you're going to live in a blue state. If you live in New York, you're going to live in a blue state. If you live in Texas, a red state. And apparently that's the way it's going to be for a while. And this person was saying that the next presidential election, you can pretty much predict how 46 of the 50 states are going to vote the next time. You can just predict it.
That's probably
true. You
can
you can put a wage on it. There's four that could go one way or the other. Wisconsin, Arizona, Nevada, and Georgia are the four that this person thought would be in play. And that's not good for the country because
– No.
Not only because of the presidential election, but imagine if you lived you live outside of New York City. I mean, you're not being represented. They're not listening to you. It's the same problem outside of Seattle, outside of Portland. So you begin to have a lot of frictions even within the states, Bill.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I think what's happening around the United States is that it's dividing up into segments. And people, I think, take into account the political views of the area that they want to move to or are contemplating moving to, and it's become a very important part of people's decisions. And I think that's kind of sad. You know, we talk about – we should point this out. We talk about blue states and red states. That doesn't mean everybody in the state
is
blue or red. You know, you have states where look at the gubernatorial election in New York just recently. I mean, the difference between the blue vote and the red vote was very, very small, though it stayed a blue state. But there are many, many states that the difference is 3 or 4%, and that difference can change. The thing that the unknowns for the future of American politics are many. One of them, and I think it showed a little bit in this election, is that there are millions of children being graduated from our schools every year who have been given a woke curriculum. And, you know, for a certain amount of time after they graduate, they believe that stuff. Then they begin to realize it's foolish. But I think that could tip the scales very badly. The 2024 election campaign is basically already started. I mean, we start campaigns now so early. But it is already started. The big question is the Republican Party, because the Democratic Party is waiting on Joe Biden. If Biden wants the nomination, he could be completely out of it. I mean, he could think he's on Mars, and they'll give him the nomination.
I think
for two reasons. One, because you can't turn down your incumbent president, but also I think there is a genuine, almost physical fear of Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
I mean, if he runs, is he going to keep her on the ticket? Or is he going to offer her a better job, somewhere like, you know, head of Disney World or something like that? Because now on the Republican side, I really believe that one of the things we will be following in a very, very intriguing way in the next 3 or 4 months is Donald Trump and what happens to him. He's in a lot of legal trouble. And I think that's one of the things that the political reporters sometimes miss is that anything he plans now can go right down the drain if he gets indicted. I mean, if he's indicted, does he run? Does he continue to run? I think he would lose a tremendous amount of support immediately. So
I think so because I think there's, you know, in my case, I had expressed doubts about, a couple of times that we talked about this before the election. This is for the last few months. That I had expressed doubts about Donald Trump or President Trump, not because of what he did as president. I always thought he did a pretty good job on balance. But I was talking more in terms of, first of all, how old he will be. He will be 78. if he runs again, which means we'll have another president in his 80s in the White House. I mean, 80 is a wonderful age, I guess. I hope to make it. And it's a wonderful age, but probably not a good idea to have a president of that age, taking into consideration how difficult the job is. The other reason, Bill, that I had my doubts about him was that we have such an amazing bench of governors.
Who are
doing an absolutely fantastic job. I mean, I look at, you know, I'm biased when I say this, of course, but I look at the governor of Texas. What an amazing job he's doing. Now, I don't know if he wants to be president, but he certainly has the resume to run if he wants to run. Obviously, everybody talks about Governor DeSantis. I like Youngkin. I like the governor of, I mean, it's kind of a quiet governor, but the one from Ohio is doing a tremendous job. He was reelected in huge numbers. So we have such a bench of governors that, you know, it's almost like, I mean, I know you'll understand this analogy. It's like having a baseball team with a triple A team that could take over in the majors at any moment, Bill.
That's exactly right. And that's a very strong selling point, I think, to the American people, that any one of these governors could become president. And there is a record of accomplishment that each one has running things. But, you know, you can't predict the future, obviously. We talk speculatively. We don't know what the international situation is going to bring. It's very fraught right now.
Yes.
We have a president who seems to have been captured by the left wing of the party. They're going through the lame duck session of Congress, determined to get through as many pieces of radical legislation as they can before they lose the House in January. I don't know if they'll get anything through. I think that there may be enough Democrats who are sane enough not to do some of the crazy things they want done. But
right.
I'm very surprised that no one has suggested the possibility of a third party. Because if there's any time one could possibly make it, it's now.
Right. No, this is the moment. You're right, because there's a yearning for it. There's a yearning for somebody. But I got to tell you this. You talked about making tough predictions. So I looked up my favorite prediction about the future from somebody you know quite well, Yogi Berra. And he said, it's tough to make predictions, especially about the future.
That's just exactly right. Yes.
I mean, that is such a funny, I mean, it's such a great quote because it's true. That's exactly right.
I wonder if he knew exactly what he was saying.
I don't know, but all I can tell you is he certainly had the magic touch.
Oh, sure. Oh, he did.
Or these
yes.
things that...
It ain't over until the fat lady sings.
Right. Or the other one I like is that restaurant is so popular, nobody goes there. Or it's too crowded or something like that.
Right, yes.
Yeah, something like that. But yes, the future is hard to predict.
Nobody goes there because it's too crowded.
Exactly. Nobody goes there because it's too crowded. So all these great quotes, I don't know if he wrote them down or somebody passed him a 3x5 card saying, okay, Yogi, try this one. So I don't know, but he was really, really good at this. I will say this, just for the benefit of anybody interested in the World Cup. The United States, about 5 minutes ago, beat Iran, and that means that the United States passes to the next level, which is a 16. They go from 32 to 16 teams. So the United States will play in the next level, which is good. It's good for this team, and it's good for the United States. I don't know. I haven't really seen the numbers. So I did read an article saying that the World Cup is not really as popular as some people think it is. But either way, I mean, it's exciting to watch the United States win.
Yes.
So let's congratulate the United States.
My question is, now that the United States has won against Iran, do you think the people around President Biden will suggest to him that he should apologize to the government of Iran for defeating them, that it should not be taken as a symbol of our view of Islam? I think this may be necessary.
Well, I'm sure that one of the members of the squad will make that remark and say something like that, But I got to tell you, something funny did happen yesterday at the World Cup. The coach and some of the players were answering questions from the media, which is a routine thing to do. Just the usual question, usually they're questions about, how do you feel about today's game? Those kinds of questions. Nothing usually more profound than that. But a reporter asked the question of a young African-American player on the U.S. team, a very talented young African-American player, who I think is the captain of the team. And the reporter said something like, how do you feel representing a country that discriminates against black people? And, Bill, I swear to you that I thought for a minute that it was a reporter from ESPN.
It may very well have been.
I learned later that it was an Iranian reporter. But the moment it happened, my instinct was, oh, my God, this is somebody from ESPN or MSNBC.
Well, I recall seeing a tape of that moment yesterday, and I think that the player answered it very well. He said, we have discrimination, but there's discrimination everywhere, but we're making progress. And I think that was exactly the right answer.
No, that was an absolutely beautiful answer because I don't know if they had prepared the players for these kinds of questions. The Iran contest, the game with Iran, was getting a lot of publicity back in Iran. In fact, I have two people from Iran who I know here in Dallas who were telling me that the people in Iran are very angry with this team, that they're not following the team because they feel that this is a team of the government and they're anti-government.
Yeah.
They're not cheering for the team. So it's just interesting how politics can come into something. You don't think about it. You don't think of a World Cup or a World Series for politics, but I guess it does come in, Bill.
Oh, absolutely. Look, politics gets into everything. Remember the U.S. versus Russia hockey match at the Olympics back in the early 80s? I mean, the miracle U.S. team, of course that was partially about politics. And the World Cup, though, I don't know what the reason is, although I have my own theories, that in the United States, for example, soccer has never been that popular. It's never broken through to a leading sport. This is a country of baseball and football and basketball. And soccer has tried many times. They have a league, of course, obviously. There are some people who follow it. And we also have these soccer moms who run around momming soccer, whatever that means. The soccer stars are not heroes in the United States. And I think one of the reasons is I have never particularly cared for the game. I mean, I find it hard to root for in a game where after 2 hours somebody might get 1 point. We're a high-scoring country. We're the United States.
Right.
We like big numbers. And we like football. Even baseball can sometimes result in some big numbers. I also find it odd that have you ever noticed these people on these teams in soccer never talk to each other? We have huddles in football. They talk. There's philosophy. There's history. They ask about their families. And in baseball, those scenes on the mound where the old coach comes out and the old manager comes out and philosophizes for a few minutes about the pitcher he's about to fire. I mean, I kind of like those little moments in sports. In soccer, I don't know if these guys even know each other. Do they know each other? Do they have name tags? And also, I find it very hard to root and be excited about a sport where people go out and try to get hit in the head with a ball. I mean, they talk about soccer moms. What kind of mothers are those? Letting their kids go out and get hit in the head. It's never been a sport that's excited me. But I know internationally, of course, soccer is a very, very big thing.
It's a big business, obviously, too.
Oh, yeah. The World Cup is a big thing. Now, I don't know if this particular World Cup will be seen as successful. There's a lot of controversy, as you know, about the country in which it's being held. It's kind of a dictatorship. But I think once it's over, That'll be it. I don't think it's. I don't. It doesn't have those memories. It's.
Yeah, go ahead. No, I was just going to say it's a very difficult game to watch. For me, it's a very difficult game to watch.
Yes, I find
this. I always tell my, because I have a lot of friends who are soccer fanatics. I have a good friend from Argentina who's a soccer fanatic, and I always say to him and anybody else who is a soccer fanatic that I absolutely admire the players and their incredible abilities. What they do with their legs is unbelievable to me. How they move the ball and pass the ball, and how they pass the ball to the right. I mean, there's so many incredible talents in soccer. My problem is that people are screaming and celebrating a 0-0 game. Can somebody explain that to me? That's hard to understand. England and the United States end up 0-0, and it's like winning the Super Bowl. And I'm saying, wait a minute. There's something wrong with that. The other thing I don't like, and this is just my own personal, I guess, taste, is that I don't like the fact that they decide their championships with literally penalty kicks.
Yeah.
I mean, I am sitting there, watching. I remember a few years ago, the single last game, the final game, they play overtime, and then they decided over penalty kicks. And I remember saying to my brother, that's like deciding the seventh game of the World Series over like a home run derby. You play 14 innings or whatever, and you say, okay, one side will have a home run derby and see who wins the World Series. The one thing I love about baseball is they play. They play until somebody wins. And that's also true of the Super Bowl. That's true of the NBA Finals, the hockey finals. You lose the game or you win the game on the field or the ice or whatever.
Yes.
You don't turn it over to a bunch of penalty kicks. Now, what people tell me is that the reason they have to do that is because the players are exhausted. Okay, I can buy that. I can understand that. They play very hard. Well, then why don't they have more substitutions and bring in some fresh legs,
Exactly right. It is true. I mean, for example, in football, you have the offensive team and the defensive team, and people get a chance to rest. And as you said, the penalty kicks aren't very exciting. What's exciting is when you see a football player starting, on the 3-yard line of his opponent, running 97 yards to a touchdown, and it's happened. And that's excitement. And I think one of the things that makes some of our sports so exciting is that they really do develop individuals. I mean, there are individual baseball stars. There are individual football stars. I guess there are individual soccer stars, but it's awfully hard to tell them from all the others.
Right. Well, again, as my friend from Argentina always says, you just don't have the passion. And I say, that's true. I don't. I don't have the passion for the game. I admire the athletes, and whenever I see them, they do, as I say, they do things with their feet that I just personally, you look at it and you go, my gosh, how can they do that? But the game itself, I just don't have any passion for it. Well, Bill, before we get into a lot of serious stuff, I did want to say happy birthday to the movie Casablanca. It came out literally 80 years ago this week. And I wonder when the movie came out, if anybody thought we'd be talking about it 80 years later, Bill.
Not too many. It was a movie with a very interesting past. It was not certainly not something that people thought would go on to greatness. Humphrey Bogart thought it might ruin his career. Very apprehensive about it. There are stories, I don't know if they're true, that Ronald Reagan turned down the part of Rick in Casablanca. But the movie got made, and it became an instant success and even a greater success years later. And I think one of the things that made it such a success is the fact that many of the extras in the movie were actually refugees from Nazi Europe. And they had a passion. For example, in the scene where they sing the Marseillaise, those were actually Frenchmen who had been forced out of their country. And they sang with such passion. And there were people who later said, who were in the movie, who were not from France. And he said, only then did I realize how they feel about this movie, about this is their opportunity to say something to the world. It's the plot is not a particularly great plot, but it is a moving plot. I think the casting was terrific all around. I am not a huge Ingrid Bergman fan, but I think she did a fine job in that. And, of course, it had all these wonderful lines in it, round up the usual suspects. That became part of our vocabulary. And that very, very few movies can can say that. And then, of course, the song, you know, "You Must Remember This," became, as time goes by, became an American classic song. So whether they planned it that way or didn't plan it that way, it has become part of the American film vocabulary, directed by a director named Michael Curtiz, who really was a very, very good director. It's interesting that some of the performers in Casablanca, none of them went on to, well, the stars were stars already, but some of them went on to other careers in music. One of the lady who plays the guitar would perform for President Roosevelt during the war several times. And some of the other performers also went on to performing careers. But I think they're pretty much all gone now. I believe there is one surviving member of the original cast of Casablanca. Yeah. But it's a movie you can see 10 times, and you see something new every time.
Right. No, that's what I like about it also, that you learn something new. And one of my favorite lines, well, I think one of the great lines that came out, I don't know if it was an original line or if they borrowed it from somebody else, but the line when the sergeant says, "I am really shocked," or something, you know, that there's gambling in the house.
Yes, I am shocked that
right,
gambling
right.
is going on here. And then he says, round up the usual suspects. And there were other moments. I mean, when Rick was asked why he came to Casablanca, he said, he said, "I came for the waters." And the other person in the scene says, "There are no waters in Casablanca." And he said, "I was misinformed." I mean, just little moments like that. And Sidney Greenstreet, of course, who is known actually for his weight, big, heavy actor. They just all came through. It was one of those movies, really, which is set in time. This was the time a lot of people gathered in Casablanca believing that they could avoid World War II. Now, of course, they couldn't avoid World War II because there was fighting later in North Africa, but just the mood of the film, Dooley Wilson, who played the piano, one of the few African-Americans to have a starring role in the movie in those days. Who am I leaving out?
The fellow that she was married to,
yes,
he was pretty
yes.
famous, too. I can't think of his name, but he was a famous actor as well.
Hans
I thought
Conklin.
He was a, right, yeah, he, I thought he was a great actor as well, and, of course, the lady, the main actress, the name escapes me right now. Yeah, she was a fantastic actress as well. So there's just so many good people in that movie. And like you say, it's a movie you can watch 10 times. And sometimes you're surprised by something in the movie. I mean, you kind of go, wow, I forgot that, or I didn't remember that. So great movie, Happy Number 80. Happy Number 80 to a great movie. I don't know that there are too many movies, Bill, where we can say Happy 80 and people are still talking about it 80 years later. I don't know. Maybe Gone with the Wind, maybe.
Gone with the Wind, The Wizard of Oz.
The Wizard of Oz.
It's interesting that there were not too many great movies to come out of World War II. There were many good ones. But I think that Casablanca was probably one of the few great ones to come out of World War II. But, yes, most movies, you know, even in the golden age of Hollywood, and there was a golden age, there were a lot of very good films made, a lot of bad films made as well. But films that have lasted this long in the public imagination, you mentioned a few, Gone with the Wind, and I think possibly some of the MGM musicals like Singin' in the Rain or An American in Paris became very much a part of their era and influential in American filmmaking. But for some reason, people feel a connection to Casablanca that they don't feel to other movies. Even Gone with the Wind, which after all was about the American South And it was a very well-made movie. Well, there is controversy over it, of course, because of the portrayal of African Americans. But I don't think that people feel the same intimacy with Gone with the Wind that they do with Casablanca.
No, not at all, not at all. Let me take a little break, Bill, and then when we come back, we have a lot of issues we're going to get into with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, doing our weekly chat with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Again, another reminder, the United States is moving on to bigger and better things in the World Cup, and we wish them well. We congratulate all of them well. We talked about Casablanca, Bill. Now let's talk about what you call the lame session that I guess started, the day after the election. There's a lot of things that President Biden wants to do, but I'm not sure he's going to be able to get any of them, Bill. I don't think he's got that much influence, even though he did better than they thought he was going to do. I just don't think a lot of Democrats are going to go out and stick their neck out for him, Bill. That's just my feeling.
I think so, and I also think there's been kind of a second rethinking of the election results. When the election results first became known, many people thought, what a terrible disappointment for the Republicans. I mean, it was supposed to be a much greater victory. And yet, when people then began to look more carefully at the returns and the details behind them, they realized that 5 million more people voted Republican than Democratic in the midterms. The votes just didn't fall in the right places for the Republican Party this year. But a 5 million vote gap is a considerable gap. I mean, the Democratic Party did not come out of this election as a winner. It came out as a survivor, but not as a winner. And I think there is that recognition. I think on the Republican side, you know, we didn't do badly. We won the House. We kind of kept the Senate pretty much where it is. We didn't win the Senate. But individual races, it is true there was no great red wave nationally, but what is so stunning about the results is that there are red waves in two states, New York and California, where you never would have expected them. In New York, thanks very much to Lee Zeldin, they flipped four Democratic seats into the Republican column. That's almost unheard of. And, of course, there was a huge red wave in Florida. So while the red wave thing was always exaggerated, in my view, I mean, I even wrote before the election, where are these votes going to come from? There doesn't seem to be a red wave. There does seem to be a solid Republican victory. And I think that more and more people are thinking that way, the Republican Party not only held its own, it did take over, very importantly, the House of Representatives, which means there are going to be a lot of investigations held that would never have been held under the Democrats. And, of course, the House is where all the money bills originate. And so this spending craziness may have to come to an end. Also, I think that the election showed, and you made a reference to this earlier, that the Republican Party is filled with stars. It really is. I have never seen, at least since 1960, a party with more stars in it than the Republican Party has today. They can have their pick, a lot of Republican women as well, whereas the Democratic Party, even if you eliminated Biden and Kamala Harris through the political process, who do they really have who can point to a record? They talk about the governor of California. My God, California is sinking into the ocean. And they talk about some others. If Biden decides not to run, or if he cannot run for whatever reason, I think that Democratic National Convention is going to be a bloodbath. I really do.
Well, what's interesting, Bill, is that I think it was Ed Morrissey over at Hot Air was saying that, or was writing that, in a way what happened was bad news for Biden, meaning that he didn't lose everything. Had there been a red tsunami and they would have lost 50 seats or they would have lost 3 or 4 Senate seats, I have a feeling that the very next day there would have been a delegation going over to the Oval Office to meet with the president saying, you know, maybe it's time for you to move on. And probably also to Kamala Harris. I don't think they were,
well,
you know.
I think, yes.
Yeah. But now they're sort of stuck with him. And in the sense that, you know, he did do better than the other first-term presidents, not as well as they think he did, but he did better than Clinton or Obama in their first time. So, you know, now they think, oh, wow, this is our ticket. But not really, Bill.
No, you know, and when people say he did better, his party did better because his own numbers continue very, very poor. They really do. You have in Rasmussen today, the approval for President Biden is at 44%. The disapproval is at 55%. Those are not good numbers. And you would think if he were so victorious in the election and so spirited that his numbers would improve. They didn't really change at all.
No, not at all. Not at all. And really, I think the more I look back at the election now, I think it came down to two very important factors where the Democrats were maybe very good at political strategy and also very good at being cynical. They persuaded a bunch of women, in blue states especially, that abortion was the most important issue. And many of these women did vote that way.
Yes.
And then the young people who thought they were going to get a break in their loans.
Yes, that's exactly right, and they didn't. And they actually, also, I was rather impressed with the Republican women's vote in the suburbs. I think it's getting better for our side there. Also, the Republican vote among minority groups is getting better and better each year with Hispanic communities, Asian American communities, even some African Americans moved rightward. Nobody is talking about these groups moving leftward anymore. It's just how can we, in the Democratic Party, stop the bleeding? Because I think a lot of people in minority groups have decided that the party does nothing for them. They're expected to vote for it, and then what do? Nothing much. You know, we have now essentially all campaigns all the time. We used to begin campaigns in the year in which the candidate would be elected. I recall President Kennedy announced for the presidency in 1960, the year that he was running. I mean, it was not considered unusual for that to happen. Nowadays, people announce a year in advance, 2 years in advance, maybe someday it'll be 20 years in advance, maybe some newborn baby will be picked up and said, you're running. You know, whether you want to run or not, you're running. And it's all politics all the time. I don't know if that's healthy for the country. I think there are plenty of other things that should be on people's minds.
Well, they don't govern. All they do is run, particularly, you know, and so nothing gets done, which I think is frustrating for a lot of people. But I wonder about the cynicism of young people when they find out that, hey, they're the reason that there was no red wave, but then they find out that whatever was offered to them is not constitutionally viable, meaning the president does not have the authority to do it. So you wonder how many of those young people are just going to tune out politics and say, oh, you were putting me on. You were lying to me about that. I mean, I don't know. But I mean, the Democrats did a very good job, like I said before, of going to the college campus and telling a bunch of young people, hey, vote for the Democrats and we're going to take care of your loan. Well, they voted. I mean, they did.
Yes, they did.
Huge numbers. And in fact, if you draw a line, 30 years old, you know, under 30, the Democrats were huge. Over 30, the Republicans won. Again,
that's
I don't think that's healthy for the country, Bill.
No, either do I. I think they tried to fool these kids. They did succeed in fooling kids. Kids are easily fooled. I always felt when they changed the voting age, they should have raised it to 30. instead of lowering it to 18. I think that I think that, you know, the argument was, you remember when they lowered the voting age to 18. Well, if a kid is old enough to fight, he's old enough to vote.
Right.
And that was the argument, and it carried the day. There were some Democrats who were even suggesting that we lower the voting age to 16.
Yes.
That would be ridiculous, of course, and I don't think it's going to happen, but they are suggesting it. But, yeah, the Republicans have got to do better among young people by showing them that they will have a better future under Republican administrations. I think that they're going to have to handle the abortion issue differently. I don't know how. I haven't given it much thought, but, because people believe that the Democratic Party is going to save abortion in America. Abortion in America will be determined by individual states, and for the first time, isn't it interesting? For the first time, women will actually have a say in the issue. They had no say in Roe v. Wade, but they actually will have a say in it. But the way the Democrats presented it to the voters, you will lose all your abortion rights if Republicans get elected. And unfortunately, there were a small number of Republicans whose views on abortion politically would be considered very extreme. They may not be extreme in other parts of the universe, but they are considered extreme. Abortion is an issue the Republicans have got to avoid or have some good lines for. I do think there is a youth vote out there that is ready to be discovered by the Republican Party, but they got to do it. And also, we should mention that the Republicans must begin to understand that we now are a country that votes early. The early
right.
voters have become very important. They're not just a fringe anymore. They've become most of the voters. My belief is that this is all a result of online buying, that the boom in online buying has convinced people that you can do almost anything online. Why go to a polling place on a rainy day and wait in line for 2 hours when you can vote from home? And that's
right.
a very, very logical way of doing
well,
it.
Well,
so,
you know, I like the way we do it in Texas, Bill, which is you have 2 weeks of early voting, but you have to present yourself to vote with identification and all of that. And
yes.
then you have, you know, you can vote, obviously, on Election Day. And then you have the option of doing it absentee, but absentee requires a reason. It's not that I don't like to vote in person. You have to either you're sick or you're traveling. And I like the way we've done it. I think people here have gotten used to it now. I have voted early since 1992. I have voted early for every race. The year that Bill Clinton defeated George Bush, that year was the first time I voted in person. And early voting. And every year since, I have early voted. And I like it because you have 2 weeks, you can pick your time, you go. The lines are long, but they're not crazy long. But I just heard, getting back to what you were saying about the Democrats and how they vote early, that in Pennsylvania, the new Senator Fetterman, he had
yes.
700,000 votes in the tank before that debate took place. So
yes,
700,000
right.
Democrats voted for a man who needed a special screen to understand the question.
Yes, I think that vote would have been very different. It is. And politically negligent. I mean, first of all, Dr. Oz, who was not a bad – he really wasn't a bad no. candidate, but I think that they could have chosen somebody better on the gubernatorial side in Pennsylvania. The Republican Party disgraced itself by putting up a man who was really kind of a foul, kind of racially oriented guy, and he lost by quite a bit to the Democrat, Mr. Shapiro. The quality of Republican candidates in many cases, I think, probably made the difference. In many races, we could have put up better people. And
well,
that
definitely
includes,
Arizona Arizona and Pennsylvania, I agree with you. In
sure.
Arizona and also up in New Hampshire, it turned out that fellow was not that good. Although I have to confess that I was really surprised at him losing by 9 points or whatever it was, because I never thought the Senator Hassan or whatever her name is, I never thought she was that that viable. You know, I never thought she was that good, and yet she won fairly easily, Bill.
Very easily, and the polls were way off in New Hampshire.
Oh yeah, on that one. Yeah.
And in other places, I mean, we came close. We actually came pretty close, and I think we came close in Minnesota. Minnesota is a strange state. You really wonder how it can remain a Democratic state given the sheer incompetence of the
right.
Democrats who get elected. I mean, they've got an Attorney General, Keith Ellison, who's to the left of Joe Stalin.
And they've
got city officials in Minneapolis who have taken a beautiful city and destroyed it.
Right.
I think it's interesting that Portland is now politically very volatile. Portland, Oregon, which, of course, is one of the great traditional red cities in America. I'm sorry, blue cities in America, but apparently a lot of anger, a lot of frustration, as the people realize, no, there's not going to be any change made. I think the Republican Party is getting better.
Mm-hmm.
In 2024, of course, the election is always completely different when it's a presidential election year, because the guy at the top of the ticket had better produce, because
right.
those votes go down ticket as well. And I just hope the country survives until then, does reasonably well. I don't see our way out of any of the major problems under Joe Biden. I mean, he just goes along with what he's told to do by the left wing. But I think we're going, you know, the old Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. I think we're living in interesting times.
Well, they're going to get very interesting with the economy, I think,
yes.
Because there are some bad signs out there. But I wanted to bring up, you mentioned President Biden, I just wanted to bring up three things about him that are fascinating. The first one, I guess we're not supposed to drill for oil in Texas because that's bad for climate change, but we can drill in Venezuela. Okay,
Isn't that incredible?
I mean, you have to really wonder how stupid do they think people are to explain that one. And then even dumber explanation, Bill, is when they say, well, we're doing this because we want to encourage Maduro to be serious with his discussions with the opposition.
Yes.
You
got
to be kidding me.
That's as crazy as the other two things
I wanted. I also want to bring up a couple of other things, Bill, just to tie this up. President Biden has apparently decided not to say anything about China protest, the protest in China, I should say, and the protest in Iran. So,
Iran, yes.
Can somebody explain to me those three things? It's just crazy, Bill.
You're absolutely right. I mean, especially Iran. I mean, for goodness sake, that is a revolution that is being led by women. Please notice the silence of so-called women's groups in America, who obviously don't care. But Iran is treated with kid gloves. I really think that there are people in this administration who will not give up the old dream that Iran can be our strongest ally in the Middle East. They don't understand these ideological states. The people may not love the government, but the government loves the government. And that government is not going to give up its power easily. And you see people being beaten, and yet so little interest, so little interest.
Yeah. Well, and what's happening in China, too. I mean, you would think that the White House would issue a statement saying, you know, we're not going to send troops, but we support the people who are marching or protesting. You know, when Reagan said, you know, the evil empire, you know, something like that, you know, make a statement like, not necessarily evil empire, but make a statement clearly saying that the governments that run these countries, China, Iran, Venezuela, that these are not our friends. They're not our friends. And make it clear that we stand with the people. But I guess they have other things to do. They're worried about white nationalists in the United States, Bill.
Yes, and abortion. We should be firm in our support for the revolutionaries in Iran, and yet we are not firm because they really. First of all, there is a very large Iranian lobby in Washington. Part of it being made up of businessmen who want to do business in Iran, and there is a substantial Iranian lobby in Europe, again, driven by business people. And the idea that we can remain silent about this revolution, which is now continuing for months, I mean, it wasn't a flash-in-the-pan thing. It may even be growing. at some point, Biden has to say something, or maybe not. Maybe he feels he can get away with it.
Well, maybe
might.
He doesn't know what's going on. That's another.
That's true, too.
I know that's very disrespectful of the President of the United States, but my goodness, there are times when I do feel that way. Bill, a couple of quick things here. We're just about running out of time, but I wanted to bring up a couple of quick things. You mentioned abortion and that the Republicans have to speak better about abortion. I think that time is on the side of the Republicans on that issue. Let me explain what I mean. I think by 2024, most of the states are going to have their own abortion rules.
Yes.
So, you know, it's not going to be the same. You're not going to be able to protest abortion against Roe v. Wade because you're going to have something in your own state. And if you live in California, Illinois, New York, there's no change. I mean, you can have abortion.
So
I think that issue eventually the Republicans will benefit in the sense that as time goes by, it will be less of an issue. And the other thing I wanted to ask you, what do you think of the possibility of Lee Zeldin ending up as Speaker of the House? It's kind of a long shot.
I love it.
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever had a Speaker who was not a member of the House, although it's perfectly legal to be Speaker and not be a member of the House. He would make a wonderful Speaker. He would, of course, by definition, immediately become a presidential candidate.
Right.
He would have to be. He would be another one, another excellent candidate added to the list. But I'm all for it. I think that it would settle some of the problems in the Republican Party. It would put them in the back burner. And
yes.
I think under his leadership, they would do extremely well. I don't think it's going to happen, but it would. It's one of the best ideas I've seen in politics in the last year.
Well, the other idea is to make him the head of the Republican Party. That's the other idea,
yes,
to replace Rhonda McDaniel with
Rhonda.
Him.
Yeah,
and, you know, she's not a bad lady, but, you know, when you have a couple of elections that didn't go the way you planned them, maybe it's like in a baseball team. You got to change the manager every once in a while.
That's right,
and,
yes.
And maybe that's I think that would also create the little excitement in the ranks. And last but not least, Bill, we may have a rail strike. I would have never believed it. When was the last time we had a rail strike? I don't remember the last time, Bill.
Rail strikes used to be pretty common back in the 30s and the 40s, and they are very devastating, of course, because goods, we have so many goods that travel by rail that any disruption of the supply is going to have an immediate impact on the economy. And this is a time when President Biden can show whatever skills he has politically, and I don't think he's showing them yet. We could run into a lot of trouble. I suspect also the fear of a rail strike can literally create it. You know, if there's a fear of it, people start hoarding things. The economy is affected even before the strike. So, yeah, a possible rail strike.
And it would have a huge impact in Texas here because – We use rail quite a bit in the Texas economy. The other problem, too, Bill, and this is, again, almost a perfect storm situation, with the shortage of diesel, how are we going to move all this stuff by trucks? I mean, the whole thing is so crazy. I guess we'll bring some oil from Venezuela and refine it to diesel, Bill.
Well, you know, I mean, the energy policy of the United States right now makes no sense at all. It is just complete garbage. It is being driven by the hard left of the Democratic Party. They would rather have this country sink than open up some oil wells. I mean, they are absolute environmental fanatics. I don't know if they've actually had any good effect on the environment, but they are the people who are in charge of the Democratic Party.
Right.
And I hope that the American people realize that and realize the damage that's being done.
Yeah, well, maybe in a presidential campaign, that point could be made better than in a congressional campaign, because congressional campaigns, you know, again, are 435 elections and so many Senate elections. But in a presidential campaign, that could be, you know, one of the platforms of whoever
the
candidate
so.
Is. Yeah. Well, Bill, as always, thank you for your time. This time flies absolutely too fast, but I keep saying that maybe we need to do something about the clock, that maybe we should complain about the clock because it discriminates against us, Bill. And it runs by too fast. But again, congratulations to the American team for winning in the World Cup. And once again, Bill, thank you so much for being a part of this. It's always great to talk to you.
My pleasure, Silvio, and I look forward to next week.
Yeah, maybe next week the American team will still be alive. That would be quite. They've never gone beyond the 16. They've never gone into the 8. So that would be a huge victory if they can do it. But good luck to them, Bill, and have a great week.
Same to you, Silvio.
We'll talk to you later. Our good friend, Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, lots of things we talked about today. I really loved the little section about Casablanca. I always enjoy talking about things like that with Bill. They're so interesting. Have a wonderful week. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.